puppet masters, almost sure they have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. But until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, find the more you think you know, the less you really do. Just don't know to what degree.
So say we all, Higher Side Chatters from the Sunshine State. I'm Greg Carlwood, and it seems like a person's mental state and outlook on the world usually comes down to what they focus on. Are you seeing the complex symphony of synchronicity that guides your life, tapping into your higher self, observing the abundance of natural systems, and properly appreciating the life-promoting power of sunlight, the magic of structured water, and living in alignment with the many wonderful gifts of our unadulterated ecosystem? Or is your attention captured by the arcanically inspired artificial, industrial, and now digital layers of the Capstone Cabal's carefully constructed control matrix, the fear-based, stress-inducing news cycle, the diminishing returns of a never-ending paper chase, the shallow dopamine drip of blue light beaming from your scrolling screens, the nutrient-devoid drive-through offerings, and the tempting tug of self-sabotaging drugs to numb you from the nagging feeling that you were meant for more? Well, most likely, whichever of these two worlds holds most of your attention will determine your level of contentment and the quality of one's life. And it is the longtime conspiracy researcher who confronts the raw darkness of the big machine and emerges from the deepest rabbit holes unscathed that knows this best. And one such man is today's guest, Greg Rees. He is a self-described writer, researcher, and disseminator of hidden truths who produces the ever-popular Rees Report for InfoWars and Band.video. He also does the weekly Sunday afternoon podcast on his Substack page, and it is a true honor to have him here. The deep-diving, free-thinking, truth-seeking, tree-of-life-climbing powerhouse himself, Greg Rees, welcome to THC.
Thank you, Greg. That's a great introduction. I can tell that you're familiar with my work.
Yes, and I'm very excited for this one. Your Rees Report videos are so diverse. I could have gone many different ways with that intro, but I think separating out the natural and the artificial systems we live within is a good framing for the things we might weave back and forth talking about. I actually feel more aligned with you than I do many guests who might have a more narrow focus on one specific thing rather than the big picture. Because after a couple of decades researching anything and everything, I think we both circle around a lot of the same answers to the big questions from what I've heard you talk about before. And one of those things being that you've, quote, made peace with the world going to shit. Let's start there, because I think many people that would be listening are going to have to do that if they haven't already.
It's true. You want to hear about how I made peace?
I would love
with the world going to shit?
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting story, and the timing of it is very interesting to me. It's like life is like a movie being played out, in my experience, when I look back at my life. I guess you could say I had my red pill moment. I mean, I've had many awakenings throughout my life, but the real big one that really changed my life and floored me was around 2004. And I started dreaming about a great awakening immediately. I actually went outside that night in the fresh night air, and I was almost expecting to see a bunch of other people coming out of their houses looking at each other as if what just happened to me happened to everyone else. You know, it was very powerful. And after about, I don't know, roughly 10 years, I kind of gave up hope. It was Obama's second administration, and I just started witnessing people falling deeper asleep than ever before. It was very frustrating to me, and I was thinking, this is never going to happen. This dream of mine is never going to happen. And so you're going to have to learn to deal with it. If we're slipping into tyranny and we're going to go into this nightmare of a future, then, you know, what are you going to do? Just be depressed and miserable? I was already on a bit of a spiritual pilgrimage in my life. So I went to one of my favorite places, which was this yoga ashram that actually honors all religions and all teachings, which is something I admire. I'm open-minded and I believe everyone, I respect everyone's paths. So I went there and I actually lived alone in a temple for about 3 years. And the whole objective, it wasn't to gain enlightenment. It was just very specific. I wanted to make peace with the world going to shit, as you put it, or maybe I guess as I put it. And I accomplished that. In 2017, I reached this level of acceptance and peace and surrender. And then interestingly enough, immediately following that, it was actually a Q post that inspired me. And I wasn't really following 4chan or conspiracy stuff at that time. I was mostly focused on more spiritual stuff. But somehow I saw the very first Q post on the very same day it came out. It caught my attention very strongly. And then I started paying attention to the Trump administration, which I wasn't really paying attention to before. I assumed the fact that he got elected, I assumed at the time that he must be part of the plan. And it got my attention to the point where I decided that I wanted to then get involved. And so from day one, I got involved in this with a very good attitude, in that I wasn't expecting to change anything. I wasn't expecting the world to change. I was just in the moment, accepting the world going to shit and just doing my small part to try and bring about this awakening, which in my opinion is the only thing that's really ever going to change anything. It's a numbers game. The more people that wake up and see it is really our only hope.
Yes, I totally agree. And I love a dream trigger for these sorts of things. I think it's one of those mechanisms that lets us know we're on the right path or puts us on the right path. And what catches our attention is such an important thing. Many people talk about how the brain and our senses filter out more than it lets in. It makes sense of a chaotic soup of sensations and things we could see in a light spectrum that is way beyond what we can visualize. And so that to me is a breadcrumb to being like, well, what your subconscious directs you towards to pay attention to is important. And we should maybe think about that as more significant than just something arbitrary throughout our day. And now, if we were to zoom out a bit, I think it's safe to say we know we live within a vast tapestry of lies about who we are, where we are, what life should really be about, our historical timeline, and who the puppet masters of the power pyramid might truly be. But you do end up realizing there is a sort of sliding scale of secrets that the big they think are important to keep us from understanding. And assuming you'd agree with that, let's just go for it. What do you think are those highest priority secrets to them for us to never realize?
That's a good question, because I mean, I'm a very curious person. The reason I feel like I was born to do the work I do is I've been questioning things and digging into things since I could think, questioning things since I could talk. And, you know, my family's been ridiculing me. Most of my family's been ridiculing me since I was a kid, because I've been questioning the official narrative for that long. And that's probably the question that I'm always after too, is what's the biggest secret out there? You know, I don't know is the short answer. But to make it more interesting, if I had to guess, I would say that the biggest secret is who we really are and meaning. And I think I'm still trying to find that out. But I believe that we are living souls that have incarnated into human beings to learn something. I don't really consider myself a human. I consider myself a living soul, a child of God. I believe we are all parts of God. We are all broken up pieces of God that we are experiencing, having this experience in unique ways. For you and I, and most of the people listening, we are having an experience as humans. And I think that even though this might be the biggest secret, I also kind of think, and this is just because I've made peace with it, that the controllers, ultimately, the goal is for us to figure it out. And that's why it's the lie. I'm not angry at these people. I see them as teachers. for example, when I was in the Marine Corps, my favorite time in the Marine Corps was boot camp. I appreciate learning. I appreciate learning the hard way. That's usually how I learn the best, is the hard way. And I tend to believe that's what we're experiencing right now, is we're learning lessons, and the they that we're always talking about, and everyone's so busy trying to find out who they are and accuse them of being the villains. And I'm not condoning anything that they're doing. However, I do tend to think that they are teaching us, they are playing their role, whether they know it or not, to teach us this lesson. Because once again, if we were all to have this awakening, if we were all to pull back the curtain and figure out what's going on, not only would that change everything, but it would make us better and stronger than we ever have been in the past. And so therefore, isn't that in the end potentially something that's good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on that page too. I think that's the evolution, is you start to realize how captured society is, how absolute that capture is, and all of our assumptions about ourselves and the world, and how so many things are inverted. It's more likely that we came to this place through a fallen state rather than an evolution from the tadpole. And just so many things seem to be inverted. And you used the term life is like a movie. I often use the term this is like a soul school. Every movie needs a villain. Pressure makes diamonds. I believe that they are there to apply pressure and facilitate that learning, as you say. And something that really resonated with me, I think it was Sam Tripoli you were talking to about this, but this idea that we live in a system of cyclical cataclysms. I do think that if you were to have some of the highest ranking elite in a room, the thing they would fight tooth and nail to keep from getting out is that fact that we live in this system of cyclical cataclysms. And it explains a lot. It explains why when archaeologists dig down, they find ruins beneath cities, cities beneath cities. And they say that the more complex stuff seems to be at the lower levels, which completely doesn't jive with the story we're told about ourselves. There's so many pieces that fit within that context, but that was a big resonant moment for me when I heard you say that. Talk to us a little bit about what brings you to that conclusion. What are some of the clues and pieces you pick up to come to that ultimate realization that we are in this system and it's a big secret they want to keep?
Okay, so it's 2004 was this big dramatic moment I had where, you know, I guess you could say that was my red pill moment. And since then, I've been obsessively researching. Like, that's clearly been the theme of my life since 2004, is obsessively digging in and going down rabbit holes and trying to find answers and figure out where we are and who we are. And from the very beginning in 2004, I came across this cyclical cataclysm. And every subject that I would find myself digging on, every single one, eventually, in the rabbit hole, I would get to cyclical cataclysm, to the point where after several years, I started questioning myself and I started, because, you know, I question my own mind as much as I try to question myself as much as I question anything else. So I understand that the self-deception quality of being a human. And so after several years of this, I started wondering, is this like a schism that you're suffering? Are you suffering some type of self-destructive attraction to doom and gloom? Is that why you keep finding it in your search? So I started questioning that. And the conclusion I came to was, no, that's not what it is. It is just simply there. And pick a subject. It doesn't just have to be geology or astronomy or astrology. It could be literally anything. You're going to get to this cataclysmic end. And I guess I've maybe thought of it, but I never gave it much thought until yesterday. I was interviewing Dr. Michael Sala yesterday for my own podcast, and I asked him about cataclysm. because like you said, that is probably the subject I find most interesting. And his answer was very interesting to me. He said basically that the cataclysm is a cyclical thing, but it has more to do with our awakening. Like it's a reflection of what we are going through collectively. And so basically what he was saying is that we're in this 25,000 year some odd cycle, the apocalypse, where the unseen is being seen. We're starting to see behind the curtain. We're starting to have this awakening. It's happened regularly for, you know, who knows how many times in the past. And often in the past, when this happens, because our emotions and our thoughts affect reality, and some would even say that the nature of reality is an illusion that we are holding together with our thoughts and our emotions, which I can accept that. I've definitely manipulated my own reality through changing my thoughts and my emotions. Some people call it the law of attraction. I believe there's some truth to that for sure. And so I have thought before that collectively that could have an effect on it. I've even thought many times that that is the main reason why the dark occult use Hollywood and the media to make us think of certain things. They almost project the reality that they want us to create and make us create it. That's something I've heard a lot of people mention, and I think that's very interesting. And so basically what he was saying is if we could avoid a violent cataclysm by awakening more to love instead of fear. And so basically what he was saying is that the cataclysm becomes more violent as we awaken into this massive fear vibration, which I thought was very interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. I somewhat agree with that for sure, that they are filling our heads with very negative things. I've seen comments recently that a lot of the TV shows that we are served up are just a bunch of people yelling at each other, and obviously ultraviolence and all sorts of drugs. I mean, the big shows are about drug trades and all kinds of crime. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that on one hand, they know that mechanism of our thoughts create reality. And then on the other hand, they know that this is meant to be a soul school, and they're happy to waste as much of our time as they can through entertainment, through social media, through the endless scroll, even through stupid things like two-factor authentication, trying to log into my own bank account or just Twitter to post a show. It's like, we sent a code to your phone, go find your phone and then give us the code so you can do your job. It's like, man, at the end of the road, how many hours have been wasted with that stupid shit? So I really just think they do the calculation. Most people have 80 to 100 years. How much of it can we completely waste? If they're never willing to step forth and take charge of their life, we have an endless list of things to keep them entertained, numb, and just waste the whole damn thing. But on the subject of cataclysms, there are a lot of people talking about that and the fact that one might be coming up soon. And I kind of step back from that and look at this idea that it seems like people are always expecting the end of the world in their lifetime. So I have to acknowledge that fact. People talk about the rapture, the second coming. It just seems to be in the mix. People want to see the climax of the big show, and they all know they're going to die, so I might as well die at the end of the movie. And so that's there. So I don't know if a lot of this stuff, these clues that seem to suggest that we might see the next wipe, are just a part of that, or if it's a real thing. I know you have talked about Jason Brashears. I've interviewed him. I've talked to him about the Phoenix Reset. He seems to think it's going to be coming between 2040 and 2046. A lot of people that I got comments from were on the fence about some of that. It's a pretty epic body of work, but you tried to vet it and read from some of the same sources, and you think that maybe he's got something here, huh?
Well, first, let me say, in the great book, I've mentioned it all the time on my podcast. I don't know if it's my favorite book, but it's up there. It's my top five. The Gods of Eden by William Bramley. I've read it several times. Great book. He's a historian. he does a very good job of sourcing all of his material. It's a very scholarly piece of work. And he points out clearly that just about every 100 years, like you said, everyone almost believes that there's the end of the world is going to happen in their lifetime. He points out how just about every 100 years it's pushed by the controllers. So it would make sense that people think it's going to happen because it's constantly being pushed. And now is no different. This idea that we're hearing it now, it's not a unique thing. So that is interesting. And that should be something to take into account, that that does seem to be part of this soul school, you know, this idea that it's all coming to an end, you know, which kind of makes sense because it makes you reflect a little bit. If it's all coming to an end, it should cause a person to do some reflection. And I imagine that's important in the soul school. It's probably one of the most important things. As far as it happening in 2040, 2046, there are several researchers. I did a video on this. There are several researchers that pin it in that same time frame. Most people do. And I think it's mostly based on the sun cycles, because that seems to be what the majority of the people are saying. There's even, I just saw on Tucker Carlson, I think it's Dennis Quaid. I might be getting him wrong, but some Hollywood actor was just on Tucker Carlson talking about the Carrington event and how that's going to happen and it's going to take down the entire grid. And I think that's very interesting. It's interesting. I see Tucker as CIA. I can't help it. I have trust issues. And so it's very interesting to me to see what he's been talking about lately, because he's been talking about the aliens. And now he's talking with a Hollywood actor about this solar event that's going to take down the entire grid and send us back into the Stone Age. So it's very interesting to me. Lately, I guess today's answer, because, you know, I vary, but today's answer to your question, I would say that it almost seems to me that that is part of the plan. I don't know if it's a natural event or not, but it seems like this event that's coming is scheduled. You know, it's interesting. I'm living in Moscow, Russia currently. And one of the most interesting things I've learned from being here is that the Russian Federation is very openly talking about a pole shift that they're expecting within the next decade or two. They're not talking about global warming. Like on the subject of cataclysms, I remember many years ago when I first heard about global warming, immediately I thought, oh, that's a cover up for the pole shift. That's exactly what that is. They've created a cover story to hide this cataclysm that's coming. And I mean, here everyone knows about it. The Federation is preparing for it. They expect the Arctic to thaw. They're building massive infrastructure up in the north. They're incentivizing homesteading in Siberia. And everyone knows about it. You can go to a bar. I went to a bar and talked to some 20-year-old bartender, and I asked him, I was like, have you heard anything about the pole shift coming and the Arctic thawing? And he was like, oh, yeah, they talk about it all the time here. So that's very interesting to me. You know, who knows what's true and what's not true, but it, what is a fact is that Russia is dealing with this thing, whatever it is, much differently than the West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In one of your videos, you talk about the government-decreed starvation operation that is happening all across Europe. Pretty much every country in Europe has farmer protests or has had in the past couple of years. It seems like, you know, through the UN's Green Initiative, that's really an attack on that. And then you contrast it with Russia giving incentives to farmers and trying to help them create more food because they're trying to weather a coming storm, it seems. And our people are doing the exact opposite. But if you think about things through the context of resets, there's two really interesting ways to go. You can talk about the things they've done the last few years as if they're getting ready for a reset to occur. And you can look back to the last potential reset and the idea of repopulation and reestablishing control as if this cycle just happens every time. And in terms of the things they've done recently, obviously we hear about the elite building bunkers, this idea of total surveillance and embedded IDs under our skin and central bank digital currencies and UBI and 15-minute cities and the testing of lockdowns. It's almost like if you were preparing, if you were gaming this out and you're like, look, the whole system's going to get wiped clean. The Etch-a-Sketch is going to get shaken up pretty bad. The anthill is going to fall. We want to be protected in our bunkers, but we want to make sure that people on the surface are in as much trouble as possible. People talk about the lower fertility rates. Ding, ding, ding. They don't want us up here toiling around, mating, creating more people. They want to know where each individual person might be because they know that with a cataclysm, there are some survivors. It might wipe out 80%, 90% of people, but that still leaves a lot of people to manage. So you want to get these things in order. A 15-minute city keeps everybody close and locked in together. So when you have to go reestablish control, you know where to go. The people are mainly in these areas. The testing of how lockdowns could work. You roll that out again when you need to. Just the chemicals that crush our fertility and just make us generally weak. The fact that nobody grows their own food anymore. We're all reliant on the system and the grocery store. So they rug pull us on that and we're totally screwed. I think there's a really interesting case. Even the term the Great Reset, like they have to tell us what they're doing, so they say. Well, maybe if they are playing a role of teacher, they maybe do, because you have to have the eyes to see and you have to be given the breadcrumbs to get to the realization. But you could put a lot of that stuff in the context of some kind of preparation, wouldn't you say?
Well, I mean, we see things very similarly on this subject. In fact, I'm the first one to always say, I don't know what's going on. As I noticed, we're living in an era right now where a lot of people are very confident that they know what's going on. And I don't believe any of them. I don't think any of them do. And I don't either. But the only thing that makes sense to me, if I had to guess, I would say it's this cataclysm, because that does, as you laid out, it explains everything. And as I mentioned, how Russia's dealing with it differently, here's how I explain that. And this is just obviously a theory, but this is my theory because it does explain everything. But, you know, I don't believe for a second that there are any governments, especially as big as Russia, that are acting independently of the secret society network. I think that's very naive to think that. So I don't think that. So what's happening then? Why is there this opposition, which there clearly is? I don't believe it's all theater. I believe, you know, things are handed down through the secret society network and people just play their roles. And sometimes their roles are fighting each other and they're serious fights. Like one is going to perish and one is going to be the victor. While you could say it's theater in a sense, I believe it's theater with dire consequences for these actors. So they're not acting. Their emotions are real. But it's just a game that's being played that we're not aware of. So how would I explain that? Is I would explain that as in, for example, you laid out this perfect picture for America, the 15-minute cities, the underground bases, all of that makes sense, especially if we're getting this close to the event. 2030 is the date that they want to have this UN Agenda 2030 cinched up. They want to have everyone out of the wildlife areas and into these small city areas. And that's exactly what you'd want to do if you were planning on going underground to survive this thing, because they've obviously got the bases set up. They've had them set up for years. They obviously have them occupied and being run and maintained, but they're getting to the point where they're going to want to start traveling to and from on a regular basis to get ready, because they might not know the exact date, or maybe they do. And so it would make sense to have everyone corralled into these small 15-minute cities, to depopulate to a certain extent, to do all of these. It really explains everything. If they want to go underground, if they are expecting the result of this cataclysm to be very negative for that area. I had someone point out the science of the ice age coming. I've heard many different angles of the ice age coming to North America. The movie The Day After Tomorrow was written by scientists based on the science of the, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the water flow dying, specific water flow that goes through the Atlantic that's going to cause some type of ice age. And so why is Russia not doing that? Because Russia is not doing that. Russia is encouraging people to thrive. They're encouraging people to have more babies. They're building infrastructure, preparing for a thaw. They are creating the new economic system, which was handed to them by the big banks. Because if you look at BRICS, it was out of the Western banking system. The international banking system is who wrote the original paper. So it's not like they came up with it. It was handed to them. So maybe there are people that not only know this event is coming, but they know which way the wind blows. And they know that certain areas are going to be perhaps an ice age, or there's not going to be food growing there, or maybe even they'll sink underwater. And certain areas are going to thaw. And maybe they know, maybe Russia Federation is right. Maybe it is going to thaw. And that's not why I'm here, because let me just say right now, like my lease is up at the end of the year, and I plan on probably moving back into the Western Hemisphere. Because I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. And I'm not going to, you know, bet in my, you know, I'm just going to keep going, riding the waves and seeing where I end up. I'm not really too concerned about the future. I'm just, you know, like I said, I made peace with it. I'm just riding the waves. But it would explain the difference that you're seeing in the two areas. You know, you can look at maps of Antarctica from the past that show Antarctica was not always frozen. And the clock, there's a famous clock from Prague. It's very similar to the Mayan calendar. It's like a circle within a circle that moves around the outer edge of the circle. If you're having a hard time visualizing that, you can just look up Prague clock. And if you threw in, for lack of, I mean, it's not a good description, but it'll work. If you throw in flat earth, if you throw in Prague flat earth clock, it'll come right up.
Oh, you said it now.
And the idea is that every time one of these pole shifts happen, the sun in its current circular pattern slightly shifts to another area of the surface, causing certain areas to thaw, certain areas to freeze, changing the entire landscape like a giant clock face, which I find to be a very interesting theory. And maybe that's what's happening.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm unsure about these things. These are just the best ideas that I have pulled out of the rabbit holes. Like, there's many, many ideas down there, and the ones that make sense, that are congruent, that seem like pieces of a bigger puzzle, are these things that we are talking about. And it's pretty wild, but it seems like if you look back, almost every culture had a way more complex timekeeping system than we have today. And that should be something that people take note of. And I think the reason for it is there's probably rounds in these resets, these cataclysms, where people were probably a bit more open. The whole Tartaria thing, like, I'm not going to go there, but the ideas under that umbrella are that there was more community across the world and more sharing of information. So that's probably why a lot of societies had pyramids where the sun at a certain point makes the serpent or comes down the center hallway at the equinox. Like, these are timekeeping monuments. And you have the Mayan calendar, as you mentioned. And it seems like even Native Americans and people embedded in nature had really robust timekeeping systems. And then today, it seems like, well, there was a reset. Royal families emerged across Europe that were all strangely related. You would think that the king of Spain would be Spanish, the king of Italy would be Italian, and there's not much more to say about it. But no, it's one big family, as if they were clued in on something that was going to occur. And if they could only be the first ones out of the gate, they might be able to craft the whole thing. And it seems like it's very ambitious, but it seems like through secret societies and brotherhoods that are loyal to each other amongst, above all other things, that probably occurred. And now all that information is locked away in the Vatican vaults, in the Masonic basements, and they burned down the Library of Alexandria. All these vast troves of this information are gone now. We discover them every once in a while. The Nag Hammadi texts. There's stories of monks climbing down mountains in the Andes and they break open a wall and there's scrolls inside. So you have this idea that a lot of people at a previous time thought it was important to hide certain scrolls and information in really obscure places. And then the elite thought it was really important to go to every corner of the earth and spread their message and re-educate everyone and destroy those records of any native people, which is, again, very ambitious. So, I mean, that's kind of the story that I see emerging. What do you think? Are you pretty much in alignment with that? Do you have anything to add or elaborate on?
Well, I think that kind of goes along with the cataclysm thing in a way, because it's almost like the current model has been liquidation and preparations for an event that's going to wipe everything clear again, you know, as opposed to building things and this world that's deeply connected with community, which does seem like that seemed to be in the past. It's a different phase. It's the death phase. It's the liquidation phase. And, you know, if you look at the great year compared to like the Vedas talk about the yugas, and we're at the end of the Kali Yuga, which is the Iron Age, I believe. And then the next stage is the Golden Age. And the Kali Yuga is described where everything is turned upside down. Everything becomes inverted and very dark. I even heard a Hindu scholar say that you'll know you're at the peak of the Kali Yuga when humans are bred for consumption. And I remember I heard that probably 10 years ago, and I thought it was like, wow, that's horrible. And then I recently, a few years ago, I was like, well, wait a second, we're there right now. I mean, that's exactly what's happening right now. So, and according to the timeline, we are at that's the end of the shift. That's the end of the age that we're at right now, in the beginning of the Aquarian Age. We are at the end of the Dark Ages and the beginning of the Light Ages. And the work of a gentleman goes by Logan. He's got a YouTube channel called Decode Your Reality. I'm a big fan of his work. It brings peace to me. And I think he does a very scientific job of demonstrating that the reality of fate, and that it really makes you, I've always questioned how much free will do we actually have and how much of our life has already been determined at our time of birth. I've been asking that question for my whole life. And what he does, if you haven't seen his work yet, I highly recommend it. He'll take anything from a rock album to a very famous world figure and spend about 3 hours breaking them down using astrology, numerology, Chaldean numerology, pi, phi, prime numbers. And basically, he's just showing a redundant code. The same code keeps showing up no matter what method he uses to decode it. And this redundancy and repetition show that, in my opinion, show that a lot of what we call conspiracy, a lot of what we assume is somehow planned out as a ritual or something, which is, that used to be my thought before, is like a lot of these things are ritualistically planned out. You start to realize that a lot of it isn't. A lot of it is just a pre-program that we are naturally living out. Like he did Trump. I found myself angry at Trump because, like I said at the beginning of our interview, kind of what got me into my work was Q and Trump. I started thinking these ideas that maybe there's like some white hat thing going on. And I'm only human, so I got caught up in that. And then I came to the conclusion that that was a lie. And then I felt betrayed. And then I watched his work on Trump, and he's done several videos on Trump. And in my opinion, what his work does is it shows that Trump had no choice. Trump is just being Trump. Trump is living the life that he was born to live. That you could read his code from the day he was born and know where he was going. And I had him do me. I hired him actually to decode myself. And that's exactly what I got too. After 3.5 hours of him going over my own code. You know, it's not surprising because you know yourself, but what's surprising is that it's all there in the code. And I was like, wow. And to me, that brought peace because it's like, there's no reason to get mad about any of this. And this is actually what a lot of the sages and gurus and masters and almost every religious teaching will tell you, that the physical world has already been written. What we are experiencing has already happened in the higher realms. And what we're experiencing in the present is something that's already been written. And so if you really want to affect physical reality, then you can write it and it'll come out in the future, you know, if that makes sense.
I agree. And there's guests like Chris Knowles, who we've had here many times, who focus on synchromysticism and seeing a lot of these codes throughout pop culture and world events and award show rituals and the symbolism and all that. And I use the term that when you really get into the details, it seems too precise for human hands. And that's kind of the conclusion I came to, too, is like there can't be a room of people crafting a reality this specific when you really hold some of this stuff up to the light. So, yeah, it seems cosmic in a sense. Maybe there's a higher plane where it's planned out. But I do think that there is like a gravity, to use a very loaded term, or a magnetism to certain plot points. And you can maybe connect the dots however you want, but there's going to be these certain beats, this rhythm to things. And within the rhythm, between the dots, the line that connects the dots, that's you. And you do have a little bit of flexibility on how you get there. And I think that's how I reconcile free will with fate and all that sort of stuff. But it is super fascinating from astrology on down. It seems like this whole thing is coded. And we could talk about the matrix code, the artificial overlay that seems manipulative, but there also is a natural code baked into reality that is quite impressive and esoteric and beautiful. I told you that the first video of yours I ever watched was the one about the heart. And I love that kind of stuff. I have had Dr. Gerald Pollack here before talking about the fourth phase of water. But in this video where you talk about the heart, and it's always been a thing, when I heard that the heart is not a pump, that gel state water in our blood cells has a negative charge and it's kind of what pushes through our body, I always thought that was fascinating. And you add the insight of Steiner, who said the heart is a seven-sided regular form that sits in an imaginary box in our chest, almost like a sixth platonic solid. And according to the guy who you say has operated on more hearts than almost anyone, Paco Torret Wasp, if I caught the name, he says that the heart is more like a cell water / blood cell vortexing machine. And so you get into these esoteric aspects of life and nature that suggest things are pretty magical. And even if you just start growing your own food, you see that a tree can provide a lot of abundance, but we just don't do it anymore. And so I really like looking at that layer of reality, the natural layer. Just think about if all the suppressed healing devices and energy systems that we've digested, what if they were allowed to be out there? And what could life really be like? That's what the Tartaria people fantasize about. It's like a crazy utopia. But the thing is we don't even have the right paradigm. We're stuck in viruses and explosions, and we don't even realize that nature kind of has hidden clues to things like vortexing and magnetism and light and structured water. And if you live in that world, life's pretty great, wouldn't you say?
I agree. That's my favorite world. In fact, I dream a lot about doing work exclusively in that area. Recently, in the past year and a half, actually, I've been questioning my work, like questioning, am I helping to generate this fear by focusing on these things? If I believed that were true, I would have stopped. I just question it. And I try to, what I've done is I've tried to keep a positive angle as much as I can. And I try to stay away from the fear. But I mean, to be honest, a lot of my work is like ringing an alarm bell, you know, being like danger, 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 right. You know, which I think is important still. But that's just where we're at right now. But then again, I think that really the only real solution, and I don't have a whole lot of faith that we're going to actually pull this off, or we could pull it off, but you never know. I'm still optimistic. But really, we could turn it all around if all we did was start creating the world that we want to create, start focusing on the world that we want to. For example, in my free time, I mostly watch Bigfoot Sasquatch documentaries. That's been okay. It brings me joy and peace when I'm just trying to relax on the couch and stuff. And
sure.
I started doing it almost as a joke because I thought it was a goof and I was like, this is funny. And then the first night I was like, oh no, this is about as real as anything else. And one of the things I'm understanding about Sasquatch is one, Sasquatch is kind of, as one researcher put it, they are the managers of this place that we live in. They manage it. That's their job, which I thought was very interesting. And it just stuck in my mind. And then it makes you think, okay, well, what is their main message then? If they're the managers, what is their main thing? And one of their main things is to encourage us to leave the world of technology and embrace this world of natural wonder, which is, as you pointed out, magical, you know, the vortex, the energy that exists in nature, the ether, all this stuff is right there if we want it. And this synthetic world of technology that we've been focused on and building up around us is really almost like a cage to keep us hidden from this miraculous, incredible world that we were given that is ours if we choose.
Yes, absolutely. And even the thought that our ideas create the reality, you could say it another way and say, well, the reality is there. The ether is there. It's just what you think in your mind is possible. And if you're convinced there is no ether because you read it in a academic textbook, well, then functionally, there is no ether. You're not harnessing it for anything. If you don't believe in the power of nature, then it might as well not exist. And thus, your thoughts are creating a reality where green paper rules all. And the scarcity of that green paper is the middleman between you and the actual abundance. You think about how much they throw away at a grocery store because people didn't come in with enough green paper. God damn it. You know, like it's just so silly, but it is a mental construct mainly. And before we run out of time in this first hour, I wanted to throw in a little more about things I've heard you say regarding the last reset or the potential of a last reset. You've talked about this Order of the Odd Fellows, and we don't hear much about them, but according to their basic Wikipedia page, the Odd Fellows is an international fraternity consisting of lodges first documented in 1730 in London. The first known lodge was called Loyal Aristarchus, Lodge Number 9, suggesting there were earlier ones in the 18th century. Notwithstanding, meetings were held, quote, in much revelry and often as not, the calling of the watch to restore order. Names of several British pubs today suggest past Oddfellow affiliations. King George IV of the UK admitted in 1780, while he was Prince of Wales, to be a member and was the first documented of many Oddfellows to also attend Freemasonry, although the societies remain mutually independent. Some Grand Lodges imply a Judeo-Christian affiliation. The American-based Independent Order of Oddfellows enrolls some 600,000 members divided into approximately 10,000 lodges in 30 countries. In total, members of all international branches combined are estimated in the millions worldwide. Probably a surprise to many people, but their website is full of images of adults smiling with children. We could say families, but we could also say it a different way. And a lot of references to management duties. And I think you made an interesting case for how they could fit into the big picture. And we could get into the orphan train story that is talked about a lot. And I've seen many images of these world fair incubators. And this idea that they are making their own people for such a purpose that they can put wherever they want. They have no context. Hiram Abiff, you've said, is known as like the grand orphan. It's like all about orphans. And we've talked in previous episodes about predators and pedophiles and Hollywood. They seek out people with like divorced parents or broken homes, and then they manipulate those people. If you can make your own people from the ground up in some human farm or some kind of just pillaging of orphanages, this is where you would find people that are highly moldable for whatever operation you have going on. But I thought The Oddfellows was interesting, something that was kind of new to me. It's hard to find new things on my plate anymore. But talk to us about some of your thoughts regarding if there was a big previous cataclysm, some of the techniques that might have been used to repopulate and where we see little breadcrumbs of that.
Yeah, The Oddfellows is probably the most recent mind-blowing thing I've learned is probably The Oddfellows. And that was maybe a couple of years ago when I came across that. I have a paywall on my Substack, and one of my videos for paid subscribers is about The Oddfellows. The Oddfellows and these orphan trains. And it's not that hidden. Like, you can go to Wikipedia and check this stuff out, but no one really talks about it. And I would say that at the very least, what it is it was the British Crown repopulating America after they took total control of it after the Civil War, which is obviously a history that we're not taught. But that would be on one end of the spectrum. If it's nothing else, it's just that. It's simply that the British Crown completely gained control over America after the Civil War, and then that was their method of filling the country up with people that were beholden to them. Because like you said, and it's very accurate, if you have a child that was born in your home without parents in your society, and then you raise them up the way you want, they're going to be loyal to you. They're not going to be loyal to a mother who loves them. They're going to be loyal to their secret society brotherhood. It's the perfect slave. The only reason I never thought of it before The Oddfellows is because I tend to be one of those humans, like I think most of us, who has more empathy and compassion and a gentle nature. You know, I don't think about controlling others. That's not something I spend a lot of time thinking about. But if you were to think about that, then obviously what you'd want is your own people, and you'd want to make them yourself. Makes perfect sense when you think about it. But when you start looking into other strange anomalies during that time, you mentioned the World Fairs. I don't know what to make of the World Fairs. I also have a video about that on my Substack where, you know, a lot of people will say that there was a society, a worldwide society that was full of these Greco-Roman buildings all over the world, and that the World Fairs were a way of hiding that. And it is interesting because several of these World Fairs, they all had the same type of architecture. We're told officially that they were built temporarily using wood, plaster, and linen. And while some of these buildings obviously were that, many, many, many others were obviously not. Hundreds of them were bigger than anything that exists today, bigger than the wonders of the world. And in almost all these cases, there were mysterious fires that broke out, that burned everything, that were never investigated. And it does look as if they were trying to hide history. And I don't trust history anymore. A lot of it started from the Oddfellows. Once I started looking into the Oddfellows and these World Fairs, and then I saw a documentary on the Bolshevik Revolution made by a Swiss filmmaker. I can't remember the name of it. But in that film, they basically pointed out how America, even America in 1776, was contrived and created by the British Crown from day one to create a proxy that the British could control, and that this whole idea of 1776 is a lie and an illusion, which I can accept that. One of the reasons I can accept it is because it completely formed who I am today. Like, I grew up from a very young age being deeply inspired by the Constitution, by the First and Second Amendment, the idea of independence and freedom, the idea of opposing tyranny. These shaped who I am today. And so because of that, it's very easy for me to accept that it was done on purpose as a form of mind control because it worked. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that was the case, then I am a test subject to affirm that, yes, that was effective because it took that hold on me. And I'm sure that many people could say the same. The thing about the Oddfellows and the Orphan Trains is God only knows what the hell that was all about. It really makes you question history. That's what it did for me. Like I said, it was the final thing that made me be like, throw my arms up in the air and be like, you know what? Who knows? History is up for grabs, and there's no way I'm putting my faith in any of it.
Yes, yes. Well said. And of course, I want to talk to you about where we are, the place that we seem to be in, maybe called the last Sephiroth, the last Sephiroth on the Tree of Life. And of course, NASA and all those ritualistic things. But just to close out this first hour and add just a little more context to what we have talked about, people might consider the British royal family's day to be over, like they're kind of a waning power. But you say in one of your videos, they are the largest landowners on Earth. They own 6.6 billion acres of land around the world, 1/6 of the surface of the Earth, if you believe the math. But that's obviously super significant. And then you have another report titled Underground Tunnels and Hybrid Breeding Programs, and you cover Phil Schneider's claims about stumbling into a network of deep underground bases with non-humans in them under Dulce, New Mexico. Phil died about a year after going on this whistleblower speaking tour, and a lot of people think what he said was just too sensational, but you go on to add that Dulce is 170 kilometers from the Four Corners area, known as a skinwalker cryptid hotspot for beings that some say live underground. It's 160 kilometers from Scientology's Tremontina base, which is an underground complex they built for some reason. And it's 200 kilometers from Epstein's Zorro Ranch, which has an 8,000 square foot underground level and is said to go even deeper. And of course, Epstein talked to people about his hopes to seed the human race from this facility after a cataclysm. So more logs for the fire. Those pieces are starting to fit, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. If you really want to get to the truth of the matter, you have to factor in non-humans and an underground world, an underworld. In my opinion, that's really what is at the heart of what's going on, is non-human manipulation. I mentioned Sasquatch as being the managers. They're not the only managers. I would say at the top of the pyramid, you're going to find bankers, but they're just Judas goats and managers for something else, which I would say are non-humans. The royal family, I always use the term the crown rather than the royal family, because it's somewhat enigmatic exactly what the crown is. They do seem to have more power than everyone else. It seems almost like they have more power than the Vatican. The Vatican and the crown are at the top, but I would say the crown is at the very top. They also seem to have a method of invisibility where they don't take a lot of heat, which is surprising when you look at all the meddling that they've done throughout the world and the bragging of it. You know, the British were very clear, you know, that nothing sets under the sun that isn't part of the British crown. And yet they seem to evade almost all criticism. No one's pointing the finger at the crown. So it is very interesting. And there are several people that have said that the members of the royal family are shape-shifting reptilians.
That gets said.
That sounds a little kooky and crazy, but been more than one person has made that claim. And when you really get into what reality is, the idea of solidity and physicality is an illusion that even they teach in Chemistry 101. Chemistry 101, they'll teach you that the only reason you can't move through a wall is because of a particular electron in the outer valence shell of your body that is charged a certain magnetic charge that it repels. So this idea of solidity and physicality is really a magnetic repulsion. And really all reality is sound, frequency, and vibration, and light. And so if that's the case, then why couldn't reptilian beings shapeshift and hide into a human form? And the underground bases is, I love Phil Schneider's work. And he's not the only one. And when you start getting into like the idea, for lack of a better term, I don't like the term because it puts an image in people's minds that I think is ridiculous. But the flat earth rabbit hole, when you get into the flat earth rabbit hole and you start seeing the underworld and the implications of all that, like the underworld is everything. There's so much hidden from us, not just under the surface of the earth, but in the oceans. I mean, we're really on we're on the smallest part there is here on the surface.
Mm-hmm. All really great points. And I would just add that you go on to say in that Underground Tunnels and Hybrid Breeding Programs report, there's a lot of other details that might make people think, like you say, high-level Freemasons allegedly believe in a hollow earth where a non-human species rules from an underworld called Agartha, and their most guarded secrets seem to revolve around a cyclical cataclysm event. Phil Schneider also built submarine bases and said that most were connected to the vast network of deep underground bases. Ghislaine Maxwell had a submarine license and was known to transport people to Epstein Island through an underwater submarine port. The U.S. military built a submarine base on St. Thomas Island, which is just 13 kilometers from Epstein Island. And right next to this submarine base is Water Island, owned by Joe Biden's brother and their business associate. You then say in a recent interview on Iconic, Juliet Bryant, who was kidnapped by Epstein for 2 years, said that she never witnessed any of the dozens of girls there being trafficked to any men other than Epstein, but she did wake up once paralyzed on a table and witnessed Epstein shapeshift into something else. Wow, wild stuff, but I love the connections. I know people who have gone to shamans in the Amazon and undertaken various ceremonies, and they say that with the dancing, flickering campfire light and the substances they're on and the chanting and the ritual, you can see the shaman take on the form of various animals, jaguar, eagle, you know, all the main totem animals that people discuss. And it's not like you would think a physical shift happens. It's not like some Transformers thing where they go from robot to car in a real literal physical sense, but they're like a facade drops or a new facade, a new mask comes up.
I saw it happen and I wasn't under the influence of drugs or trance. It was in the middle of the day while at a place practicing breathing and meditation, which is, like a hyper awareness actually. And I saw someone shapeshift into a reptilian. So, I mean, it's like anecdotal, but there are several people that claim the same thing. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it really is. But man, I really, really enjoyed this. I love trying to tackle the big picture stuff. I agree with you. I get excited about new ideas as long as there's a case to be made and it's somewhat believable and not completely silly. I mean, that's the nature of the term. You blew my mind. I like having my mind blown. It's why I do what I do. It's why you do what you do. But before I cut you loose, let the people know how and where to get your stuff and anything else you might be working on next. Anything we want to plug, give them the links and all that good stuff. This is why we do the dance.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm not very good at this, but I need to adapt. And I have mentioned it a couple times. I mentioned the Oddfellows video and then the video I'm working on now, which is part of a 4-part series on I'm calling it Aliens on Earth. Aliens is the term everyone goes by, but I don't think these creatures are alien at all. I think they've been here as long as we have for the most part. So on my Substack, you can go to Substack and search Greg Reese and you'll find me, or search Reese Report. Or you can go to pretty much all my posts on Twitter and band.video. I send a link to my Substack. Or actually, here's the best one. Just go to reesereport.com and there's a link to my Substack. And if you become a paid subscriber, then there are exclusive videos. I think I've got 7 of them, and then I'm about to put out the 8th one, which is the part 2 of the aliens on Earth, which is, gets into the whole German thing mostly. I would say half of part 2 of this alien thing is the German history, just because I find it so interesting. And yeah, that's the best way to support me. Because of this Substack and because of the support, it has given me a lot more independence in my work. My next public video is the great Maria Z from Z Media from Australia. I think she's from Australia. That gal never misses a thing. She pretty much gets all the crazy stories before I do, before anyone else does. And she just put out this thing about how some professor from an Israeli university that partnered with Pfizer, they were doing lectures on nanotechnology, nanobots in injectable fluids using a syringe. You could inject it in, say, like a vaccine or something. Back in 2015, 2013, they were showing that this was already a technology that existed. And then they have photographs in this lecture that look exactly like what these people are finding in this experimental shot. And Pfizer went dark years ago. Like, they started scrubbing the internet of this information as if they didn't want anyone to know about it. That to me is very interesting. So that'll be my next report. If anyone out there did get the experimental shot, I feel for you. But on the other hand, I have to say, you know, the human body is a miraculous divine creation that was made to cleanse itself and heal itself. And I believe that we can heal ourselves from anything, any toxins and any poison, with a little self-discipline and self-love and nurturing. So hope is not lost.
Amen. I agree with you there. The only thing more impressive than the amount of poisons and toxins they throw at us is the fact that we keep on going. And I look forward to that work. From one Greg to another, you are the man. And we laid a really good foundational place where most of our major ideas are laid out. And I hope maybe further down the road, we can do it again and build off what we did here. I hope the people respond. And if they do, you'll know it's a place that's worth your time to come back to. But until that potential day, take care. And I'll be watching that Flat Earth debate too.
Yeah, Greg, I appreciate it. And if your audience is anything like you are, then yeah, I'm sure that everyone's going to enjoy this, because we're obviously on the same page with many of these things. And I appreciate you reaching out to me. It was super fun to hang out and talk about this stuff.
Heck yeah.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Of course, man. Thank you. And boom goes the dynamite. Pulling back into the station after quite a wild ride. Greg Reese bringing the heat. Man, I hope people liked this as much as I did. A guest like Greg is going to be few and far between. Someone who can get past Conspiracy 101 stuff and really get to the heart of some of his overall thoughts on the situation we're in, what really motivates them, what the biggest, most important things to control are for them. And it's speculative stuff for sure, but cyclical catastrophe makes sense to me. And I've said many times I'm not a flat earther, but the fact that it's censored on the level of COVID stuff probably makes me more curious than any other thing. If it's a psyop, I don't think my buddy Robot Polisher would be on his third round of social media accounts. Ignoring all the rest, I just get curious as to why that would be on their removal radar. Because they definitely aren't worried about deceiving us, you know? And regardless of the local composition, the idea that our overall structure is as a sphere in a tree of life-like configuration is compelling. Adding in that these spheres would have actually been mapped out and understood in ancient systems of magic, even more so. You can fold a lot of the big epic spiritual narratives into that model, and it's pretty internally consistent and compatible. I just really had a good time with this one. It was fun. I know when we talked about Antarctica, I relayed the flat earth argument that Antarctica has never been circumnavigated. And before I get comments, yes, I know that if you Google it, you can read about Captain Cook's trip and a few others, but these are covered in the flat earth arguments. And the conventional story we're told is that Antarctica has 11,000 miles of coastline, but these expeditions talk about going much, much further than that. Captain Cook's story is that he traveled over 60,000 miles to get around, and that doesn't add up. But to say that he went all the way around the ice wall until he got back to his original position where the same geography was north of him, 60,000 miles for the outer ring, makes some sense. But the counterpoint there is that Cook didn't just go around Antarctica. He surveyed the ocean overall. He was zigging north, he was zagging back south, and that's where the added mileage is accounted for. So again, I stay agnostic on the issue, but I do digest the points and the counterpoints, and I just let it be what it is. But that was Plus Show talk, I think, and also in the Plus Show, we mentioned that big InfoWars flat Earth debate. Well, it did happen, and it was certainly respectful, but it wasn't full of facts. Harrison, who does some really good reporting as another one of the InfoWars hosts, he took the heliocentric globe model position and he basically said right out of the gate, I'm not coming to this with a scientific case to be made. It just looks and feels like the conventional model is right to me. And most of the time he talked, it came back to that core stance. And that's okay to feel that way, but it's not really the correct way to go into this sort of debate or even the best way to be entertaining. I would have liked to see a more detail-oriented debate and not just an argument about how it feels, but that was just a small thread that my buddy wanted me to ask Greg about, so I fit it into the Plus Show. Shout out to Robot Polisher. But if you filter all the major actions of the elite through a lens like cyclical cataclysms, a lot of it does make sense. So many researchers now are talking about feeling as if the elite are on a timeline and it's being rushed. Well, how do you interpret that? Do you think about some higher level boss just yelling down their necks, I want results? Maybe, but why? If you control the world, why would you be worried about the pace, really, if you're winning? Why do you care about hitting some exact milestones on the timeline? You think you would control all of it. So you might control the ongoing events of the world, but not the timeline. That would be interesting. That would speak to cyclical cataclysms to me, something they expect but can't control. People talk about that 2025 Deagle report that shows the world's population or the US's population dropping by, like, I think it's the world, 70, 80% or something. Well, people now are saying, oh, I think that's probably the vax, but maybe it's a natural event. Who's to say? Good stuff, though. And this really only came to be because of a synchronicity of sorts. I guess I could tell that story, but I had seen Greg's report on the heart, and that is what really got me interested in his work. So I asked Mystic Mark of My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, because he has a lot of contacts that I can't seem to find, and sure enough, he came through. And I just added Greg's email to my big list of people I want to have on. And it was there for a couple of months. And then I sat down to plan the next month of shows, and I just felt a tug to fire off an email to him specifically. And he responded saying that he wasn't familiar with the Higher Side Chats the day prior, but he just so happened to be doing some research on Richard Hoagland's work. And that led him to have been listening to my interview with Richard at the same time he opened an email from me. I mean, what are the odds? The universe did step in and nudge us and made sure we actually would get together. And this is what came out of it. Hopefully the universe is pleased. And you never know, was it our higher selves or a manipulation of some trickster spirit? The possibilities are endless, but I hope we all had a good time. If you liked the first hour, treat yourself to the second. The full two-hour show is always better, but don't just take my word for it. Use the 7-day free trial right at the top of your show notes and hear it for yourself. Life is short. $8 is less valuable than ever. Double your pleasure, double your fun, for crying out loud. Now, the last episode was with the man himself, Isaac Weishaupt. Many people do seem to really love the area of research that he focuses on. And as for what the plus rating was, we landed on a 4.7, right back to the top tier. And just saying, when I reacted to the reactions of the Dr. Hillman show, that initiated a lot of positive reactions from people who previously just liked it and didn't feel the need to express that until they heard that there was backlash. And in the end, the overall feedback definitely evened itself out. And now, instead of a, 3.7 or a 3.8, it's now a 4.1. So the needle was moved in the right direction, and all is right with the world. But Isaac seemed to be a lot more universally liked, and I might imagine the same would be true for today, but we shall see. Some people have the same knee-jerk reaction of, I'm just done with this. If there's even any entertaining of something radically different about the Earth shape and Earth model. That's just a fact. Who knows how big a factor it might be. But I appreciate Greg Reese's willingness to be bold and his ability to say, I don't really know, but we're just talking about my best guess. I try to express my own ideas with the same caveats. But that is it. Let me tell you about the upcoming community events on the meetup calendar before we really call it in. The next one is coming up on Star Wars Day, May 4th. In Ashland, Oregon at the Caldera Brewery. May 12th, Salem, Virginia at Parkway Brewing. May 16th, Flame International Restaurant in LA. That is a monthly recurring meetup. And May 19th, we got one at the Witch's Hat in South Lyon, Michigan. And another one that's been added is May 23rd, the Yerth Cafe in Pasadena, California. I like it. HiresideMeetups.com for more details on any of those events, so you can RSVP if you plan to go or make an event of your own at a place that you'd like to meet some other local THC fans at. Also, last thing, big shout out to my buddy Tony Party, because we worked on another parody cover song, and it's been a fun way for us to keep in touch since I moved away, and you end up getting to hear something new. So it's a win-win. And this one might not be the best fit thematically for this episode, but it is in the mix. I mean, the Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory does cover all. So enjoy. I've done my part. Your move, Power Pyramid Puppet Masters, Grand Deceivers, and Cosmic Terrarium Runners. Your fucking move.
You can try your best, but you won't succeed. In the transhumanistic future we see, we'll keep you wired so you can't sleep. Tech is a curse. It's just one chip behind your face and some parts below that we can replace. Progress leaves no time to waste. An endless thirst. Lights inside your head forever connected. And Elon tries to fix you. To fix you. Your computational powers grow while you run endless loops of cat videos. Profits will soar and cash will flow. Increase your
first get it should have a massive advantage over people that don't have it yet.
Well, I mean, it's the kind of thing where your productivity would improve, I don't know, dramatically, maybe by a factor of 10 with it. So you could definitely just, you know, take out a loan and do it and earn the money back real fast.
Yeah.
Be super smart.
When do you think you're going to do it? How long will you wait?
Yeah.